about stress. So how many of us are stressed? And we like, we're psychologists, so we like questionnaires, and usually there's a Likert scale of 5 points, and we say that the people that are answer 4 or 5 are really stressed, and so we count those, and we get about 27% in the latest one, and 210, so that the number of people that are significant, they're extremely stressed. And there's a high proportion of those that say, it's the job. That's why I'm stressed. It's unlikely to be home or other things. And those people are likely to be well-educated and professional. And why is this important? Because if you're stressed, you're likely to be off work with physical symptoms or burnout, psychological stress. And the problem is, too, is that if you're not back within a short period of time, you're likely never to come back. So the most, I don't have the curve, and I'd like to get to see the shape of the curve, but after a year, only 2% of people come back if they've been off on disability. So it is a problem. This is an obligatory slide that everybody presents, right? It's the cost of, and if I was talking about hemorrhoids, I'd have the same slide, right? The cost. I just made up the numbers, by the way. They're all bogus. I just made it up. It's just because everybody has to do this. But there is a cost. And the other thing that bothers me about this is that it might be a cost, but it's my revenue. Right? I hate to say it. I mean, I don't know why we do this. I mean, it's somebody's cost, but it's another person's revenue. Right? So why do we do this? I mean, but there is a problem. And insurance companies are paying more and have more people off for psychological reasons for disability now than ever before. It's the fastest growing claim. So that's the introduction about work, the ambivalence about it, the importance about it. Now, I want to give you now, talk about stress, and I want to give you a simple model, a general model about stress, and see how we use it. And to show you that stress really at its most fundamental is simple. And just three components. There's an external demand in the environment that interacts with our capacities, that we try to meet that demand in some way. And then that product yields stress. So if our own capacities can't meet the demand, then it gets translated into stress. The external demands, sometimes they're quite obvious and sometimes they're not. And again, can I direct your attention to this great book called Zubiquity? And the whole purpose of the book, it's written by veterinarians arguing that people doctors need to know more about veterinarian medicine. And it was actually written by a cardiologist in connection with veterinarians. But the cardiologist, Natterson Horowitz, she was about to, with the aid of the veterinarian, anesthetize, prior to intubation, she was going to anesthetize this primate of, I don't know what kind of primate, but she looked at it and smiled at the primate just before the injection. And the veterinarian looked at her, grabbed her, said, "Stop that!" And she says, "Why?" And she said, "Have you ever heard of captive gaze? This could cause cardiac myopathy. Can cause, you're thinking what a beautiful little animal this is, and the animal's thinking, I'm going to be eaten. I'm going to be eaten." And that's such a thing, of course. It's cardiac myopathy. It happens about 20% of animals that are fixated with a predator's eyes. So sometimes stressors are not terribly obvious, and this is an example of how some people can misconstrue them, but most of the time I would argue that the demands are quite obvious, and I've listed general ones and specific ones like organizational change. Right now, job insecurity, especially on Sunday night, that's a huge one. Will I keep my job? Lack of authority or how to exercise authority, that's a big one. Am I being too hard or am I being taken advantage of? That's the dialectic when you're managing people. I don't want to be Attila the Hun, but on the other one, I don't want to be a sap. So where is the middle? So a lot of managers deal with that dialectic. Where are we going to be in the middle? Ambiguity is another one. I remember when I started off as chief psychologist at the Royal Vic, I was waiting for somebody to phone me to tell me what to do. And I was there 28 years, and the phone call never came. Completely undefined as to what I was going to do. And I realized after a while that I had to make this up myself. So that causes stress, the ambiguity. So there are general stressors that I think that apply to everybody, but what appeals to me, and especially because I love my job right now, and it's an education for me to see people in various professions. So I think there are very specific stressors for, and so I tried to gear this a little bit. So for professors, university professors, what's a major stressor is a sense of respected territory. That this academically is my field, people recognize that and give me license in that field versus a department where that's not recognized and you've got three experts in the same field. They're at each other's throat. In mathematics, and I was talking to various people in mathematics, and there are two types of mathematicians, I think, at higher levels anyhow, which are mere mortals and geniuses. And if you're not a genius, don't apply. So the question there, are you a genius? And then the chair in the department, where you have to use moral suasion. You can't fire people. You can't give them stock options. How do you motivate them without that authority? And so how then that certainly is a stressor. So going back to this original model here, we've got this external demand. We've got internal coping. And we can, so when something happens, like where organization changes or there's more work to do, we can work harder, smarter, change the meaning of it. We can say, well, maybe work's not important. What's really important is dancing. So I'm going to become a great tango dancer. So you can change the meaning. So you can do all kinds of things acting on the external demand, right? That's one way of coping. Or you can cope the other way. You can try to modulate the stress, which is the product. And you can do that by a variety of things. One of the big things right now is meditation, mindfulness, and it's fine, but it's no better than any of the other somatic techniques. And in fact, I'm able to tell people in 30 seconds a type of diaphragmatic breathing that probably most of you know that is extremely effective in terms of somatic calming and coping. Distraction, getting people on your side at home. Don't you realize what an asshole my boss is? That kind of social support is so important, eh? And so that you have people on your team at home. So those are the ways to cope. But what happens when the capacities don't meet the demands? So here's a little one. So under resources, we've got attention, the ability to pay attention. And then here, when we're excessively aroused and stressed, what happens? We don't pay that much attention to what it is we're supposed to do. And then that leads to poor work performance. Our performance is bad. We're disappointed at ourselves. That increases the demand because we're not performing as much as we should. And then that leads to decreasing confidence, and we're losing confidence. See, it's a mess. That's why I say it's simple, but it's complex. And this is the model of what happens to people in burnout or stress. Let me emphasize it another way. And what makes it complex as well is the number of signs of stress. Because stress is a coordinated physiological and psychological response. And it happens in five major domains. It happens in the physiological domain. So you can have you can have mimicking diseases across the board. You can have gastrointestinal problems, migraines, blushing, high blood pressure, all kinds of things. You can have vegetative problems, sex problems, lack of eating, sleep problems, behavior, emotive, cognitive. So that you can have a symptom in any one of these. And the most important thing is that any one of these symptoms can become a node, that you then can have a whole trail of negative things that happen. So I've just picked one. And again, it's going to seem simple to you. You're going to say, well, this is like, it's so simple. But it's not simple for the people that are doing it because they're thinking quickly. They are thinking these ideas, but all at once. So here's a node of, this is sleeping, so I'm worried at night. So you go to bed, there's something that on your mind. And it wakes you up. It's some task to do. Woke up at 2 o'clock, couldn't get back to sleep. Oh, gee, what happens if it happens tomorrow? I'm going to think about it in the afternoon. I might not sleep tonight. Oh, gee, the idea of not sleeping is stressful. I'm going to worry about it. I panicked last night. How can I work if I'm tired? If I'm really tired, I'm not going to be able to meet my expectations at work. I'm going to lose my job. All that happens, a concatenation of causal factors that you imagine, but instantaneously. So, and it can happen with any node. So I have one here. There's another one, sweating. You can take any one of these symptoms, and then you can have a trail. and this is sweating, so will it be noticed? I'm going to fight to make sure that I don't sweat. And of course, I sweat more. And what will think of, people think of me, that I'm weak. And if they think I'm weak, I'm not going to be able to have the image that I want. So all these things lead to more stress. That's why I think a model of psychological disturbance isn't really can't be adequately described by a medical model. A more apt model is the idea that life is a minefield. We fall into holes we're bound to. I don't spend much time with clients asking them why. I don't spend much time asking them about their childhood and saying why you fell in that hole. What I try to do is take away that shovel that they're invariably using to get out of the hole. And these are the shovels. These dramatic things that they say to themselves and the concatenation of symptoms that follow. So that's a model of stress. And then I try to tell them, and they don't believe me, of course, at the beginning, because they're so embedded in this, that I'm saying that there are negative cycles, vicious cycles, but there are also positive ones. That if you start exercising, or if you start calming down, or if you start doing something else, then you can build upon that. And that can happen as quickly as the negative cycles. I know you don't believe me now, but it really is true. And so part of my job is sales, convincing people that you can have these positive cycles as well. So take home message, life is like a minefield. We're sooner or later falling into it.